How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Adnan Shabab, the founder of Umi Falafel and multiple other restaurants here in Dublin. We hear his story of having spent 21 years in a Palestinian refugee camp before journeying all across Europe to come to Ireland to start his business empire. Here's my chat with Adnan.
Adnan, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Gary, for having me.
It's a privilege. Thank you so much.
Looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's been fun. Your son Adam reached out and I was like, that sounds like a brilliant story. Yeah. The minute he said Umi Falafel, I was in.
Thank you.
My office used to be directly across from your Dame Street branch. Yeah. Every Friday, that was our treat.
Oh, really?
Every Friday, that was like, yes.
Very proud. Thank you.
Yeah. Palestinian wrap and sweet potato fries.
You know what? The Palestinian wrap was 4 years ago nominated one of the most sold item.
Not surprised.
You know, through Deliveroo worldwide, I mean, number four worldwide.
Really?
That was a business insider report, which is, I said, my God, that's, you know, we have done something big.
So good. Amazing. That was every Friday. So it's cool. I like this. We talked about full circle earlier. That's one of those little full circle moments where I was like, amazing. People will know Umi Falafel. People will know that brand.
Yes.
How did that start?
You know, I have this idea in my head after the downfall of my previous business where I started delivering food ingredient to, you know, ethnic restaurants. So in 2008, our business went down. I think it was the collapse of many businesses.
So you were supplying to other restaurants and shops.
That's correct.
Yeah. What were you supplying?
All food ingredients, especially that for ethnic restaurants. All the the exotic spices and the fish and meats and all of these stuff, and we have so many. We give credit to so many people and they couldn't afford to pay it and we were struggling.
Okay, so you'd given a lot of credits to the customers and then they went bust and then you went bust in that ripple effect.
Well,
okay.
Yes, we sold that business to get out of it, just to pay our debts.
Mm.
So, as I said, earlier, and I had this idea, I want to do a street food, I want to do, our... the most famous street food in the Middle East. I said, if millions of people love it and live in it, why not in Ireland?
Can't be wrong.
Can't be wrong.
Millions of people can't be wrong.
Just have to try it, okay, let's, I want to, I saw some similar ideas, in Netherlands and, Barcelona and London. And, Ireland needed this, type of concept. So I was looking around, Dublin too, where it needed a footfall. This type of business, it's a quick lunch. It's, for those who are, working in an office, get out of the office, go to the cinema before go. So it's, not a substantial meal, but it's a meal that, you don't plan to go to.
Mm.
And then you just, you go and grab it. So I thought, I had this idea after that 2008. I was actively looking in areas. I want a small place. I want specific, dimensions. And, so suddenly, one day it was a rainy day. I was walking in Dame Street and I saw a friend of mine who I worked with before. I said, what are you doing? He said, I have my, restaurant here, but I'm struggling. I couldn't pay the rent. And he was, it was tough for everyone at that time.
It was very dark.
Jokingly, I could take it over, relieve you from debt and, your commitment to the landlord. And he has a guarantor. Are you serious? I said, yes. I have very, little saving, to be honest, after all these troubles,
You just felt, in your gut, you were like, oh, this is the place.
Yeah, this is the place. Oh, my God, this is a good location.
It's an incredible location.
So let's, I'm spontaneous when it comes to things. And I think, for those who are working in business, you don't need to think too much. And if you think too much, you will fail.
Yes.
You know? So you just do it.
You'll never do it if you think too much.
If you think too much, you're not in this, you know, in this field, you know. Just, you know, go with your guts. You know, no thinking about, you know, after 2 years, you know, your debt, and just go and like crazy. You know, it's like gambling.
Yeah. Everyone thinks it's a straight line when in reality it's like that. Up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
Yeah. So we had this conversation, said, okay, well, will the landlord know, you know, say, okay, said, you know, he said, I didn't pay him for some time, and I think he, if there is something good, somebody good, he will be okay with it. Anyway, we make an agreement, check hand, you know, traditional way, we do a lot of businesses, check in hand, you know, and, you know.
Your word.
Yeah, in our words, you know, just check hand, and, you know, your word is your word, you know. This is the contract.
Yeah, so it should be.
You know, so your reputation, you're going to keep your reputation, your name. You know, shake hand, my friend, yes, fine. When we going to start? Okay, go for it. And, you know, we have some obstacles where the case company that has the lease has been striked off and we have to revive it again. And
okay.
You have to reapply and it was, you know, the landlord wasn't happy and all of these things that comes up.
But you made it happen. But
we
you
made
got
it
there.
Happy. We, you know, we get it back again. You know, because it was in the, within the time that we have to do it. I paid him some money, and I collected from my friends that who believed in my ideas. You know, they funded me, and I tried to make it with very minimum.
What was your vision? What was your dream for what it would be?
My vision was to have a vegetarian option, a quick restaurant, a decent food, you know, not greasy, healthy, affordable, you know, where people that, you know, because it works back home, you know, and it should work anywhere.
Yeah.
It's, you know, millions of people eating it.
Over the past 5 years on this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish business who grew from one idea to become world-class companies able to compete with the very best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to becoming more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. And if there's one thing that entrepreneurs want, aside from more money, it's more time. The local enterprise offices want to give that back. Their supports for competitiveness and productivity can help your business save time, money, and energy. For them, it's all in a day's work. So if you want to give your business the gift of time, decreased costs, and lower electricity bills, then go to allinadayswork.ie, take 2 minutes to fill out the form, and let your local enterprise office handle the rest. If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy. So, in a couple of weeks on May 21st, I'm hosting the Retail Excellence Ireland Retail Retreat in Dublin. It's Ireland's largest retail conference with speakers such as Michael Corcoran, old friend of mine and ex-head of social at Ryanair, and a special guest I can't reveal, but here's a clue. He recently led Ireland to big success in the rugby field, and he's an expert in managing winning cultures. You can figure that one out. Visit retailexcellence.ie to grab a ticket, and I'll see you there.
The concept is right, you know, healthy, quick, affordable, vegetarian.
You know, hard to go wrong. That was, you know, vegetarian thing, it wasn't my main focus at that time, you know. But through, you know, the designer, those who I employ, they emphasized on this. So they brought it to my attention, to make it bigger. You know, I have to say thanks to Nikki Hooper and John Kay, they're brilliant. She's the graphic designer. He's their partners, you know. And that's I'm still working with them in other concepts after 10 years. You know, they were, you said, you know, they're foodies as well. You said, Adnan, you know, this is the main focus, you know. So they reinforce, you know, my ideas and said, you know, this is it will work better. And then brought up the vegetarian
thing. So how long did it take between like shaking hands with your friend going, I'll take it, to like getting the first customer in through the door of Umi?
May to October.
Oh, pretty quick. So
May to October, and you know, we get it quickly done, and you know, started, and my heart was beating and said, oh my God, will it work, will it not work, you know?
Do you remember that first day?
Very much so. You know, I was working from 6 o'clock in the morning, doing all the, you know, I love food, you know, this is, I want my recipes, you know, I believe in myself. You know, my wife helped me, my friend's wife helped me, you know. We wanted to bring, you know, home food, you know. The recipes that, you know, we love and we cook at home. And, you know, I'm not a chef, but I love food that I, you know, I watched so many, you know, program about, you know, food. And I worked in restaurant before, so gained some experience. But I said, no, I want to do good recipes. Phone friends back home. I said, give me the, you know.
You were doing your research.
give me some hints.
Give me your best recipes. You know, I need to sell them to millions of Irish people. they probably thought you were crazy.
Exactly. So, okay, you know. But anyway, we started with home machines, like, very small grinder.
Oh yeah,
that, you know,
just
you
to get going.
Home.
Yeah,
you can grind 5 kg. You know, now where we can grind 100 kg in a time. You know, and small stuff that, you know, looking back, I say, oh my God, that was, you know, so primitive at that time.
I know, but you started. That's the difference, isn't it? You got it going.
Yeah, I have to get it going, and I was, my main focus was, you know, good food. Honest, no cutting corners. Is it good for me? Am I happy? You know, then my customers will be happy. And I'm so lucky also to get to involve with me when one of the guys who run the restaurant at that time, he just graduated from, you know, hospitality management in one of the DIT in the city center. And he worked in hotel and many hotels in best West and, you know, big hotels. But he wanted something new. He wanted something that he can. He was a young guy, you know. Ahmed is his name. And, you know, I told him, that's my vision. You are in the field. What do you think? And in fairness, he has a great input as well, you know. So I have the designer. I'm so lucky to have him. She's brilliant, local designer. She's from Dublin. And John Kay, the interior designer, a Welsh who moved to Ireland, and he did so many restaurants here and in the UK, even in America as well. And then I have this guy, young guy. He was in his late 20s, mid-20s actually. Myself in the kitchen, cleaning the dishes, grinding the falafel, doing this, producing the stuff, you know.
So when did you feel it was going to work? Like, at what point did you kind of like look at yourself and go, yeah, I think this might work. I think that we actually might be onto something here now. Because now it's easy to look back and go, now you've aided them and everyone knows it. And, you know, it seems obvious now. But back then, when was the point where you're like, I think this is going to work?
Maybe a year, maybe a few months, 8 months, 9 months after we opened, and we have so many good reviews. Many, you know, we've been featured in the Irish Times and foodies, they come and they saw the genuinity of, you know, the minimalistic kind of design and the focus on food. I was running everywhere, here and there, trying to please everyone also, you know. So I think customers saw that, you know, and I saw that we are genuine and we brought something that, you know, no, as I said, no cutting corners, and we wanted to, you know, really to offer the best of what we got.
Mm.
And this is when we started to get reports and, you know, mentioned in newspapers, many customers, they came and started to get busier and busier and busier, you know, looking at numbers of my friend who had run a restaurant before, we tripled the numbers that he was earning, you know. And I started to think this concept is working. And after a year or 2 years, then I said, oh, my God, that exceeded my expectation. Mm-hmm. I knew that, you know, deep inside me, I knew that it will work because, you know, it works somewhere else and it's in you. And I thought, but I knew I have my numbers in my head. And, you know, and when it started to exceed my numbers and the cues, they were out, says, oh, my God, that was exceeded.
Because you're bringing something very new to the market. Like, Irish people wouldn't really have, you know, had a lot of falafel and hummus and flatbread. And,
so
you
many
know.
Funny stories, you know.
Yeah, did people understand? Yeah,
well, in the beginning, you know, so they came in. We didn't say that we are vegetarian. We never mentioned in the very beginning. We said, only falafel. That's it.
Yeah.
You know. Those who knew and traveled knew what's falafel. And those who are curious who came in, give me a chicken roll.
I was just going to say, they asked for chicken rolls.
He said, my friend, we don't have a chicken roll, you know. We have a falafel. What the this?
Yeah.
So please try it. And, you know, those who are like loud, you know, where they say, what the falafel?
Yeah.
Now become addict to it, you know. Yeah. We know them by.
So once you got them name, to try it once, you know,
please try it.
That was it.
I said, oh my God, that's really good.
Yeah,
you know, they become, say, give me two, you know. Some customers give me three Palestinians. I said, my God, this is too much, you know. You know, but still, we know we laugh about it, you know. So with my staff, said, these guys, they come in for a chicken roll, and now they're addict to the falafel, you know. And that's where we, you know, I felt proud because, you know, I brought something new.
Mm.
People really didn't know, you know, it's a new taste. And they become a very regular customers. And not, I'm talking about those not, you know, vegetarians. And this is where, you know, when we started, we don't want to brand ourselves as a vegetarian. We don't want to exclude any others.
That's it. Because if you exclude, then people are like, oh, it's not for me.
So we didn't advertise it as a vegetarian. We didn't say anything in the, you know, logo or anything. So, so those who try, you know, start to try it and they say, oh, my God, that's very nice. And, you know, similar to the burritos, and, you know, that's when you just arrived. In
yeah, that's true. Yeah, like Boojum and things like that, even they kind of like grew.
The idea of me having a rice and a sandwich is strange. But, you know, then I go sometime and have burritos and I'll enjoy it. You know, so... So I was so happy that, you know, we have, you know, start to build the regular customers. Not vegetarian, but the who loves the taste.
Just the food. You know, doesn't matter what it is, just good food. Mind,
you know, just good food, you know. And then a vegetarianism is grew, you know, this was also a trend, you know.
Your timing was so good. You were ahead of the timing. Yeah.
It was really good. So we were number one, you know, vegetarian restaurant. We're you know, many awards and... We become the biggest vegetarian chain that focus on vegetarian vegan items. We put an effort on, you know, gluten free, vegetarian, vegan, and we could, you know, commit ourselves to delivering the best and being honest about everything that we do.
Mm.
You know, this is where you know, people believe in us. We build a community around us. We build.
It's authentic, you know, as well. You aren't faking it. You aren't just doing it because it's trendy.
Really,
it's
really
authentic.
You know, original about it. And the community helped us. Even those who worked with us, who now working so long with us and believing in the concept, and, you know, my managers and staff, and they love it. They're very cool. They were like, they're pushing the ideas as well, you know, my staff, and creating a really good environment for the, you know, my staff.
What were the biggest challenges setting up?
At that time, you know, my to set it up, it was the cost, and it was the uncertainty because it wasn't the right time. You know, it was crazy. You know, anybody who been in business at that time, telling me, Adnan, you're doing vegetarian, you know, you exclude money. How are you going to succeed? You get in a big, you know, location with a big rent, and how are you going to sustain it? Are you crazy? You're going to die and you're going to be out of business in a year or so. But I, you know, I kept firm and said, no, I'm not going to get no chicken rolls, no shawarmas, no meat. I'm going to stick to what I want to do falafel only, and I want to do it good. Because, you know, falafel, you have to, it has to stand out by itself, or salads and hummus, all what comes with it, you know.
So, yeah.
You know, that's it back home. So you cannot do it with many other stuff, you know. So it's the kind of, so I said, no, I'm going to stick to it and just focus on the vegetarian aspect now when it really materialized. And I want to, you know, learn more about this stuff, you know. So just to set up is very difficult. It's, find the location, I was lucky, you know. But in the meantime, I was proactive, looking at many options. I was also lucky to have the right people who started up with me, like the designer, where we have, you know, very positive feedback about the logos, about the colors, about the, you know, the minimalistic aspect of the design. The same guy who did Bonson.
Oh, yeah.
Bonson started before us 2 months.
Oh, really?
We went to Cork. They went to, we were in Cork together. We were in, you know, in the city together. We went, they went to Belfast. So it's similar kind of, you know.
Yeah, actually, you know, when you point it out, it is. Yeah, it's just.
And the guy he did.
Doing one thing, doing it brilliantly.
And he did really good. And
yeah, and I think
I'm,
that's.
I'm a customer of them, you know. And they're a customer of
it's
mine.
It's really good,
you know,
to be fair.
It's the core of good business, though, isn't it? Like, it's do one thing, but be the very best at it.
Exactly.
Don't do 100 things and be, okay. Mm-hmm. Just do one thing and be the best in the city at it.
Exactly, and it paid off.
It has paid off. How did you expand then? Because you've 8 now?
Yes.
8. So how did you go from one on Dame Street, you working every hour in the kitchen, doing everything, to being able to manage and run 8?
I believe that I have something good and a good concept that, you know, is working. And I was afraid of, you know, bigger company that will see the success. And I said, oh, my God, if somebody gonna swallow me then, you know, because there's big, big chains in the Middle East, and they will maybe will look at, and some other who have more money and see the concept, copy it.
Okay.
You know, they would have maybe more money to spend and get more experienced guys. And, you know, I'm only one, and, you know, my guys. But
so you felt you had to expand to protect yourself?
I had to go fast and to close any gaps. And
interesting.
You know, I said, otherwise, you know, somebody will come. And because it was a good, you know, successful. And every, you know, people see there's a cues and is it a successful brand. And
so in your head, you knew, it's like, okay, this is going really well, but someone else is going to see it's going really well. And
know,
take,
that's my fear,
take
of
my idea.
Else, yes.
So how did you go from 1 to 2? Because that's always the bit I'm fascinated about, is like, getting started from 0 to 1 is really interesting, and then the 1 to 2, because that's nearly a big leap again. That's nearly the same challenge again.
Yeah, we have this big conversation about it between myself and my main manager, who said, "Yeah, no, you can't do it because we will not deliver the same quality. We will fail, and you know, his vision is different to mine." And said, "No, you know, we have to do it, and then figure out how we can deliver the quality." You know, put ourselves in a mess, and then we can fix it. You know, I said, okay, let's start with maybe the second one was Rathmines, you know. So, again, you know, through contact, the guy who owns Rathmines, we knew him. I knew him. I said, you know, you have the unit, it's struggling, you know, what do you think if I take over? I said, okay. He saw the success. We signed it off. Just a few years after. There's a few things happened in between, you know, that I wanted to try. But I said, okay, let's do move to the second one. Oh. My idea, we're going to prepare the food in the main kitchen and
okay.
Then move it to there. So my manager said, it will be difficult. We can control the quality. Said, okay, let's see how it goes. It really went well, you know. And people wanted to see us everywhere now. They write emails. Can you come to Galway? Can you come to Cork?
Soon.
Oh, my God. That was, you know.
That's amazing, though. It must be amazing to kind of like people to be demanding your product come to you. Like, that's amazing. They tried it once on Dame Street and trips to Dublin or whatever.
It felt really good, you know. Because business people, you know, people who try many things, you know, some not only the money that drive, not only the profit, not only the, you know, also the success was, we're addict, you know.
Yeah.
You want the new project. You want it to have it done in
the next thing. You want the next one. Project. Yeah.
You know, yeah. One of my friends who was similar situation in UK said to me, you know what, whenever I open a new brand, a new project, it's like me marrying again, you know. You know, it's like a new, my new wife, you know.
It's that buzz, though, and entrepreneurs are addicted to it.
There's addiction.
The shiny, shiny thing.
Absolutely.
But at least you've been able to channel that addiction into, like, a consistent pattern and flow. Some people get very distracted with all different types of new projects, whereas you were able to grow. So you went to Rathmines. And then what was next? Is in like that did that have the same thing? Was that like initially quite successful, or how did that grow?
Yeah, it was very successful from day one. You know, we opened, we make, you know, we did well, and you know, reaction was very good. You know, so it wasn't difficult because I learned a lot of things in the first one, and wasn't easier on the second one. And then the third one was even, it was a challenge because the third one was Cork. So I have to travel.
You went to Cork for the third one? Yes. Whoa. How come?
There is a lot of demand. Many emails says, okay, why don't you come to Cork? I said, oh my God, crazy. You
know, why not? Let's go to Cork.
It was tough, you know.
I'm sure it was. That's a big leap for a third one. I thought that was recent. So that, the Cork was your third outlet. Third one, so new city, new setup, new everything. Yeah. How did you tackle that? Same way?
Same way, and I mean, we put a lot of efforts. We used to, you know, stay in a hotel overnight and doing through the process of setting it up. And I was excited, you know, it was so much energy. You know, I could travel, you know, there and coming back and going to the restaurant doing. But again, also, we had a decent success in Cork, you know.
So the buzz of the new project every single time.
You know, I want to be everywhere.
Has food always been your passion? Has it always been your industry?
One of the passion, because, you know, I cook at home, you know. You know, I love cooking. I am so much interest in food and the food chemistry and what ingredient goes with this. And it, you know, it fascinates me. This, you know, food thing is fascinating me. And I did a lot of research, and you know, not only for Middle Eastern food, but Thai, Indian, how to cook the steak in the best way, how to do the, you know, the.
I'm still trying to figure that out. I still haven't mastered that one.
You know, the stress relief for me going home and stay in the kitchen 4 hours,
really?
Trying to produce something, you know, and cook it in 5 minutes, you know, so much it will make me calm, you know.
Yeah.
Doing from cutting the onion to producing a nice meal. My kids, they love when they want something good. My dad, not their mom, you know.
Okay.
They want me to cook.
Nice. Okay.
So we compete, myself and my wife.
And was that before you started, you the food importation business? So you were importing food from all over the world.
Yes.
And before that, was food always kind of like the thread throughout your career? Was that always something you worked in?
I worked in many different. My stories go beyond these, you know, the food and the, you know, I was a teacher by to start with. You know, I taught literature, went to Yemen, then to Greece. I worked in jewelry and trying to sell. I introduced over my friend who was good at, you know, handcrafted jewelry, where he buy things from Thailand and selling semi-stones and, you know, try, but as I said, you know, in our conversation, you know, I was driven by the insecurity to find something that, you know, I can really, you know.
Really quick break to thank today's sponsor. If you've been inspired by listening to The Amazing Business Person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the Local Enterprise Office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get that idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out your local enterprise office on localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business today. Now, back to the episode.
And why do you think that insecurity was there? What was that coming from?
As a result of, you know, the displacement and, you know, the result of the conflict, you know, in Palestine, where my parents been moved twice, and, you know, the dispossession and displacement and growing up in a refugee camp, you know, with nothing. And you see your dad try to build himself again from, you know, left his the farm, left everything, and try to stand up again. And then your neighbors, your relatives, yourself, you know, looking at, you know, how can you survive in this kind of environment? And, you know, for us Palestinians, you know, education was, you know, the escape, the only way that you can achieve things, you know, and some kind of independence and build yourself again, you know. So this is, you know, I think similar to many hundreds and thousands of young guy, you know, people from Palestine that felt that way, you know, they wanted some kind of security. And to achieve that security, you need to master things. You need to be good at things, you know, whether you are, you know, engineer or doctor or, you know, in food or in business.
Mm.
So this is what it occupied your mind, you know.
Okay.
You know, you're afraid, you know, because situation was really tough. You know. And this is what drive me, you know, because I was fearing, you know, and this has played in a positive role in my, you know, journey. It says, you know, whatever decision I make, is it, what can it, you know, where can I go? But I've been the worst, so I can handle the worst. I handled it before, so what, you know? I have no safety net, but I know how to survive.
Yeah, you know what that feels like to start.
And this is what kept me going, is it? Whatever happened, I won't, you know, better than where I started.
When you said you grew up then, you said your dad, you originally grew up on a farm and then was moved away.
My parents came from a farming background where they grew, you know, cattle and camels and horses, you know. They were decent enough, you know, farming family. They lost everything in one night. You know, they moved to Gaza, and then after that we moved to Jordan. Lost everything. My grandparents moved from south of Palestine, what's now it's Israel, to Gaza, thinking that left their crops, thinking that they will go back, you know.
Wow.
And then, you know, get their crops and all, but, you know, with the keys of their houses. And that one journey never back.
Never went back.
They never went back.
So they thought, okay, we'll be back to harvest in a couple of days.
They thought that they will harvest the, you know, the crops, but they went. They never came back.
So over one night, and were you born at this time, or was it your parents?
My father was just a young, a teenager.
Okay.
That's the story, you know. My grandparents then. Our generation, so we went through two displacement. One of my parents, and then our, you know, 1948 to 1967, 70s, and then went to Jordan. Grew up in refugee camp.
You did?
Yes.
In Jordan?
Yes. So wasn't an easy journey. Wasn't an easy journey for my dad as well. He was, you know, in the resistance, and he was, you know, he escaped as well, you know. So what, but this is like hundreds of thousands of Palestinians have the similar circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, now it's a big in the media, but when you dig deep, this is the root of all these causes, because, you know, we've been dispossessed of our homes and, you know, our, you know, villages and being destroyed. It's a totally, you know, different experience and different environment when you grew up in an unstable village or town or whatever, to growing up in a refugee camp where many others who have, you know, they're not related. So you're trying to build a community again where, you know, different attitude, different things, you know, from this town, this is from that town, this is from this background. This. So it's a melting pot.
How long were you living there?
Maybe I left there when I was 21 to Yemen, where I did. I've graduated as a teacher, doing literature.
So you spent 21 years in the camp?
Yes.
Wow. Mm. So you knew nothing else apart from the camp?
And the camp is a tough situation, you know. It's the worst thing is, you know, you don't see a candle in the end of the tunnel. You know, this is the worst thing. And, you know, it's a black. You know, you think that's it. You know, to motivate yourself is hard. You know, it's because of the circumstances. There is so many obstacles for you to get even a job or to go from A to B, to get a proper document and to be recognized. So these obstacles shape the personality in terms of, and that's why I told you about the insecurity. And this is, you know, presence in every one of us that, you know.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think, especially in Ireland, we don't have that context. We hear it in the news a lot. We don't have the personal story of what it's like to be from there, and that feeling inside you, because we all understand what's happening there is horrific, but to see your story and understand how that affected you personally and what drove you. So when you, even the documentation piece is interesting. I met someone in a camp in Damascus, and that was what he talked about. He's like, oh, I'd love, my dream is to go to Canada. It's like, but I don't have any documentation. So he could go nowhere. He couldn't leave Damascus.
Yeah, this is stories of many hundreds of thousands of people that, you know, trying to get the right documentation, trying to get the right movement, get the visas, trying to go from A to B, as I said. And it's an obstacle, and it's, you know, everything that, you know, that you have it for granted here is something that, you know, you need to fight for it, you know. You need to, you know, whether you're taking a bus and you have to pay the fees to apply for something, it's a struggle, you know. Imagine that you get obtain the right documents and even to study, and who pays your fees, and you have to work at night and go in the college in the morning, you know, live this kind of circle, you know. So it, but for me, you know, I took it as an advantage. You know, I thought, you know, that's really, you know, I'm lucky one who have been struggling and, you know, coming out of all of this and trying to do something. And when you do something good, you know, you look back and say, at least, you know, came to a totally different culture, totally different language. I've learned the language. I've learned other languages, you know. You know, I've achieved something. I employ 90 people, and, you know, even they're locals and have been very good managers, and I achieved this. So that gives me some comfort, you know.
Do anything after you've done that. You know, so it's how did you get to Yemen? Because that was your first step, was it, on the journey? How did that happen?
I went to look for a job as a teacher. We didn't, no planning, but many of my colleagues in the camp, as you know, we went and traveled to Yemen and knew that they are employing some teachers. Palestinians, they're very well educated, you know, with the highest education, literacy rate in the Middle East, and we have the highest university graduates.
Is that because of what you said? People want that's their route out.
You know, because this is the, you know, the driving force, just to.
You said something earlier, and I've been thinking about it since, is what you have in you is what you have. What you have in here, in your chest, in your head, that's all you have
at times. That's it. You know, you don't have land, you don't have this, you don't have, you know, you have to have something in you, you know. So this is where driving Palestinians. So we went with, and I was a teacher for 2 years there. You know, Arab world is massive, so it's different cultures, different ways, different things, you know.
What a huge transition. What was it, a massive transition, though? After being in the camp for 21 years, it must have been like...
I was so happy, at least, you know, now I'm independent, and I get a job. I earn money. You know, I'm very proud, young, you know, guy, and, you know, trying to teach. I have my, you know... I influenced many of my students, you know. So, we taught them about Palestine, about the struggle, about, you know, they're very sympathetic. But it was hard also, because you do it in villages that very far as well, you know.
So you would travel around Yemen to teach?
Yeah.
What a story.
So you can walk 2 hours and, you know, 1 hour to go to the, you know, from where you live to. So, but was fun because that was, you know, where I, you know, started. I did a little bit of other stuff when I was in the camp where I, age 14, I sold fruit and veg in the market, in the local market, shouting tomatoes, cucumber, and, you know, earning some.
That was your first business.
That's correct, yeah. That's at age 14. And I knew that, you know, I mastered the math of profit and margins, you know. If I buy it for a euro, I have to sell it for 1.20 euro, then I earn 20, and then whatever, you know, waste, and then I calculate it from the profit. So these little things, but it, you know.
It's the basic, though. A lot of great founders that sit in that chair, they all have something when they were small. They all have a business, or their mom or dad might have had a business, and they worked in it, and it was just the basics of figuring out the profit and loss, just how to sell. How to communicate? How did you just communicate with someone and teach them, like, this is what these are the best cucumbers?
Yeah, you shout the best, you know, do, you know, go out and shout.
But they're the skills. They're the things talk about. Yeah. And then from Yemen, where did you go? Like, what were you thinking? What were you thinking in Yemen? Is probably a better question. Like, what were you thinking when you got there? Like, okay, now I want to do this, or did you know where the next step would be?
The next step, I wanted to go to Europe. You know, for us, Europe is the dream, where you can excel. Europe or the Gulf states, let's be frank. You know, whether you go to Dubai, Qatar, or Europe. I wanted to go to Europe because, you know, I'm a very progressive guy. You know, I wanted to see the new world and, you know, to experiment in new stuff. And, you know, I thought Europe is the, you know, it's... the land of ideas, and, you know, great thinkers came from Europe, read too many, you know, writers from Europe. And Europe has some influence on us, you know, more than, you know. So I thought, I want to go.
So where did you go?
My brother was studying in Greece at that time, and he said, why don't come to Athens or... So I applied, you know, I applied to study. So I applied to study philosophy, but I went in for a couple of months, and then he said, no, it's too tough, I want to do business.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. Going to Greek to study philosophy as well is pretty hard.
but I mastered the language in 1 year, you know.
Greek?
A Greek language, you know.
Really?
1 year I was so driven to learn the language because, you know, I wanted to speak. I want to express myself.
Sure.
You know, I want to express myself. I want to meet, you know, people. I want to, you know, a young guy, you know. So
still a year, though. It's pretty impressive. You clearly have that curious mind. I can tell you have that curious mind. You just want to be learning. You want to be understanding and taking things in. What was Greek like, or what was Greece like then, like as a young guy? Like, what was that life like?
It was fun, you know. It was an open world, you know, where... beautiful seas and nice life for a young guy who's beautiful ladies and, you know, going out.
Whole new world.
Whole new world. But, you know, I remember, you know, going into some of, you know, bars or nightlife, cafes, restaurants. And I, coming back from that background, I was feeling depressed because... hear me having a good time, enjoying the life. But I wish my all my my friends could come and enjoy there, and it could be a norm for us as well.
So you were thinking about people back in
thinking about Jordan, their, you know, the struggle, camp. You know. So why not we are having the same thing, you know?
So you almost felt guilt then.
Yeah, I felt a bit of guilt because I'm here enjoying, but my fellow Palestinians friends and they're not having the same opportunity, you know. And I wish they could have similar situation where they can, you know, enjoy themselves the way they like, you know. There was a bit of freedom and, you know, taste of freedom. And you can work, you can go out, you can, you know, earn something. It was much easier.
You were living your dream, essentially, of what you kind of imagined. Yeah, we started living
the dream and said, you know, but I've never lost the focus of, you know, wanted to do something, you know, amidst all of this. I want to do something, I want to achieve something, I want to build something, I want to be proud of doing, you know. I was looking for any opportunities.
And what was the next opportunity then beyond Greece, or why did you leave Greece?
I did work in a jewelry business where I did some, you know, I worked well and sold a lot of stuff and trying to, you know, master selling the semi stones and handcrafted stuff. And I was good salesman, you know, I was a really good salesman. And I was earning good money. Then went to visit friend, and I stayed for a couple of years, 2-3 years there. You know, I was doing decent money, you know, selling, buying, selling, setting up in a smaller scale, you know. But I want to grow bigger. Opportunity came, friend invited me to UK. I was studying the market, what to do, what, you know. Was stayed in Langley for some time. And he's originally from Ireland. His parents moved to the UK, but they have this link between Balbriggan and Slough or Langley, you know. But anyway, I get to, you know him very well, and we were very good friends. So through him, I came to UK, and his dad died, and they wanted to bury him in Balbriggan. I said, okay, I have to come with you guys. You know, and when I came to Ireland, I said, oh my God, this is the place that I want to stay.
That's, you know, crazy.
You know, I don't have so much bigger project, but I loved the Irish culture, the attitude, the friendliness, and it's totally different to the UK.
So you came for a funeral and just stayed forever.
I stayed, yes.
It's like a movie.
Spontaneous things, you know.
I'm getting the spontaneous theme.
So, my God, this, you know, I love Ireland. I love, the culture. And my friends, they're really good and supportive, and I had a good time with them. And I said, okay, let's, you know, settle and see what can I do, you know. Start slowly looking for jobs, you know. We're still young, you know, still, you know. And I didn't have much. I have some English, but not that good, you know. Where I applied for jobs, restaurant, worked my way up from a KB, cleaning dishes, to, you know, working in the kitchen, doing waitering, delivering food, all what.
So that was the start of learning the business. That was the start of kind of understanding every single piece.
But also,
of,
you have to pay bills, and you have to look after yourself in the midst. But when, in my mind, in the back of my mind, I want to do something. I want to save money. I want to, you know.
When was that, Adnan? When did you come to Ireland?
I came in 1997.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's quite a while. Yeah.
It was,
And you had that drive. You had that desire to do something. You wanted to make that impact.
Yeah. I want to build my life in a stable place where I have a little bit of stability, and to build a project that I can be proud of. Also to help my, you know, my parents and my brothers and sister.
Did they stay in Jordan?
My two parents, My father and mother stayed in Jordan, sister as well. My other brothers went from to Dubai. The others went to Greece, and so we're all over, you know. Mm. So, but I had that commitment to help my parents, you know, because this is the only some sort of social system that we have, you know. We have to provide for them.
Okay. You know? And is that how Palestinians view it when they go out into the world, that
that's the social
their responsibility
system,
you know, is to bring it back? Government.
No one is responsible except, you know, whether. In a way, also to your extended family, if you can.
Mm.
So it's this is the, you know, the way how society works. You know, those who have something that, you know, help others.
And when we look at what's happening there now, like how are people being supported now? Like when you kind of look at it, you kind of just wonder how, because it seems so cut off now. It seems so remote now. Like, are people still being able to be supported from abroad, or how is it working?
You're talking about
In Gaza and in Gaza, the camps in Jordan and things like that. Yeah.
In Gaza, it's what's happening is beyond imaginable. You know, it's a devastation. People lost everything, whether you're rich or poor, or, you know, middle class. Everyone, you know, the whole Gaza Strip, 2 million people lost everything.
Mm.
They are in tent, living on canned food. Many have relatives there. Whoever escaped death, they're not escaping hunger and starvation.
Mm.
So it's the and that effect, you know, as a Palestinian who, you know, trying to have a normal life, and it's difficult, you know, looking at your fellow Palestinian relatives, you know, they cannot even reach foods, and a genocide's happening in the, you know, on TV screens, and, you know, trying to do something you can't do, what to do, you know, and you become like a machine, waking up in the morning, do your what you have to do, and but your mind is ticking, you know, what, you know, is your body is numbed, you know, because of what can you do is bigger than you as an individual,
mm.
you know, trying to send some money, even if you can, it will, if it can reach there, but in many occasions it won't reach because there is places are completely closed. So it's one of the, it's a very tough situation at the moment, you know.
Where does it go, Adnan? Because it seems like one of these situations, I just can't see how this ends. Like, how do the Palestinian people get back to normal life? Like, how do they rebuild from this?
It's a very big question, you know. It's, I think without an international intervention, it will get worse.
Mm.
So those who have, you know, commit these crimes and putting people in this situation, they have to be accountable, and without genuine, you know, intervention, nothing will happen. And for us Palestinians, you know, seeing the reaction in the beginning of this situation in October, and seeing, you know, the reaction from Europe, America, you know, we were very shocked. Because we've been, you know, our situation has been bad for 75 years, you know, and it's for us felt that, you know, Europe and the West become the place of industrial hypocrisy, you know, talking about human rights, equality, you know, all of these big things, and it become an illusion.
Mm.
You know, and you kind of lost hope and trying to, you know, understand what's going on, you know.
Because it's October, like you say, we're now in April.
Yeah. And it happened much, 35,000 people being killed, 15,000 of them children.
Mm.
And many of them started, you know.
Died. And it's ongoing. It's ongoing. It's not like something happened in October and then
now,
it stopped
will
in
have
November.
Many people will be die because of the situation.
Mm.
So it's trying to understand this bigger picture, and trying to also keep working and you know, living your own personal dreams. And
I love your pin, by the way. I said this first thing I said this to you. I love the Ireland and
Palestine. I'm very proud, you know. We're living in Ireland, and now I'm an Irish citizen. I'm proud, you know, being here, and you know, because the reaction of the Irish people, apart from Europe, it was very genuine and understandable. And even in a official and public level, was great. You know, look at the Taoiseach's speech in front of Obama when he said, "We see their, you know, our history and through their eyes," which is, he said, very small, few words, but it meant a lot. You know,
it's important to hear things like that.
Very important. He sent that message, and you know, and you're talking about, you know, and we have in a public level, we have even stronger support. So,
it's important to hear that, because I think people feel they can't do anything; they feel a bit powerless. But then, when you hear people like you say that, like, words matter, actions matter, even small actions of everyone here in Ireland does matter. Like, and it is countries like Ireland that should be taking a hard stance on things like this. Even a small country, it doesn't matter. Size is irrelevant.
Ireland is bigger than people can imagine.
Exactly. A lot of power.
Even the Irish, because they have, Ireland has a great influence. You know, people, Ireland is a small country, but it can do a lot because of its reputation, because they have this, history and neutrality, and they have this, understanding too, and they only need to take the lead. Believe me, Ireland is bigger than they think. In terms of a world stage, they can influence change. Internationally.
And thank you for being so open about that. I know it's a very, very difficult topic to talk about, and I appreciate you just being so open and being so honest. I know you've had personal losses as well, even very recently, so I appreciate you being so open with me. I think it's important. On the podcast, I try to just have very open conversations so people can understand a bit more, so that they might never have, visited the Middle East, or might never have understood what was really happening there on a personal level. Because I think it's only when you hear someone's honest story, your personal story, that it really resonates. They might know you, they might have been new me, that it's that tying that thread together has a power. What to kind of finish on a kind of a bright note for you, what's kind of next for you, because you're addicted to doing course, things, you're addicted to progress. I see it. Give me a rundown, right? You've got 8 Umis, but you've also got multiple others. What are the others?
Yes, we have 4 brands. We're successful, but what next? This is my very important step where I want to go. I want to build a B2B catering business. This is my focus now. To build a catering company that provides services to small or big offices.
Okay.
Provide, a very decent food and with a very good service, So this is, now this is
another new business.
This is the new project. This is what I'm now working on and trying to. I'm learning a lot about it, but I'm also passionate about it. And I think this is going to be the biggest. It's bigger than Ummi because of this.
This is the one. This is the big one.
Always there is.
This is the global one.
Yes. Well, I hope that will be. I have lots of failures and and a lot of successes, but I think now some experience.
I love
that I could drive this a little bit further.
You have a lot of experience. So you've got 8 Umis. What are the other brands? So if people are watching, Shakomako, which is where?
Rathmines. And Zatar. In George Street Arcade, Shawarma Company, and Dame Street.
Okay.
And all related to Levant regions, food, where, very good flatbread style, where breakfast, lunch, and Then the shawarma, also the opposite to the ummi, which is not vegetarian, but it's meaty stuff. You know. And then the, you know, shakumak, which is a big restaurant where we, you know, have, you know, extended menu.
And shakumak, nice Rathmines. So they can catch you on, like, social media.
Yes.
Umi Falafel website, Umi Falafel social media. Perfect.
Shakumako is the you know the latest one, but it's the big now, and thanks to the community again, you know, because we built a community around us. And when we had, you know, this negative reviews, when I started, you know, to do some fundraising and try to do some a little bit of change, you know, and contribute to alleviate the pressures, and you know, even if a little small thing, but also raising awareness. We had been attacked by negative reviews.
You know, so when you started fundraising for Palestine, you suddenly got bombarded by negative reviews.
And I knew where it comes from, you know, and it was orchestrated. And we went into our social media, said to the, you know, our customers, please, you know, we are being bombarded. If you come to a restaurant, have some time to review us, honestly.
Mm.
And in 6 hours, they have 1,000 reviews.
No way.
Compete, you know, countering 30 or 40 reviews, and it's 1,000 reviews in a couple of hours. I said, my God, that's beyond expectation.
That's incredible, though, isn't it?
I was overwhelmed.
The power
so
of
many
community.
Emails, so many people came, and this was, you know, that was the power of community, you know, that, you know, felt very strongly. You know, those customers and those who also believe in them.
It shows you the power of what you've built.
Yes.
Adnan.
Was so pleased, you know.
What a beautiful way to end. Adnan, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thanks a million for having me.
Thanks for watching. Hope you enjoyed that one. If you did, do me two quick favors. Hit like on the video and leave a quick comment. It really helps the channel to grow, especially when it's a small channel like this. If you enjoyed that kind of content, click here to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And click here to watch a brand new video right now. I'll see you back here next time.